Welcome in Rick Windham as our co-pilot as we go to the KODY phone lines as District 42 Nebraska State Senator Mike Jacobson joins us for our weekly legislative update. Good morning, Senator Jacobson. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great, guys. How are you?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Adjusting to this time change. Can't believe it's still this dark at this point.
Well, I was thinking about the cows, whether they were able to get milk as early this morning with Rick or what he did there. So
they're still here in the corral, Senator. It's fine.
All right. That's good.
Now, Senator Jacobson, last week we were talking a little bit about the two-man crew bill. I believe that's LB 31. It was heard last week, and a lot of individuals from the entire state. I mean, as far west as, I believe, Scott's Bluff coming down to Lincoln to testify in support of that, along with what I would imagine a lot of written testimony.
There was a lot of written testimony. There were a lot of people from truly across the state, as you indicated. Very, very good turnout, very strong showing. The only opposition, big surprise, three railroad companies. Really kind of interesting. There was one short line railroad that they had their representative from outside the state of Nebraska who showed up and testified that this is going to be a problem for them because they don't have their conductor on the train. And interestingly enough, of all people asked the question, Michaela Kavanaugh went after her and said, let me see now. Senator Jacobson dropped this bill the first day bills could be presented on January 5th. Did you reach out to him at all and express any concerns about making any adjustments for railroads like yours? Well, not that she could recall. Okay, so she said, so Michaela Kavanaugh said, well, I'm guessing I'll be able to ask him that question when he comes up for his close, and he'll make it. I'm sure he'll remember. And so I did clarify that there was no such meeting. So, that bill is huge support. I believe I've got sufficient votes in the committee, and I believe I've got sufficient votes on the floor. The real challenge right now is whether the chair will allow it to be voted on.
Really?
And, you know, we talked early on in the session the power of being the committee chair. And Senator Geist is the chair, running for mayor of Lincoln. I think that she has always opposed a two-person crew. She made that clear to me early on, and I told her, "Well, keep your mind open. Listen to the testimony." I worked on her again this past week. They're going to need to exec really soon because I've got to name my priority bill. And one thing I know, and visiting with Speaker Arch as well, as far as the path forward, it wouldn't qualify for a speaker priority. It certainly won't be a committee priority if she won't hear it. And so the big concern I've got now is if she won't exec on it by the time I've got to make a priority designation, I'm going to need to designate a different bill for priority. Simply because I'm not going to be able to have the time in this session to be able to try to do a poll motion. Plus, poll motions seem easy if you've got the votes and the floor. But if you're going to pull a bill from the committee that's chaired by a senior member of the Republican Party, you're going to have a lot of other Republicans that are not going to have the stomach to vote for a poll motion out of that committee. I would tell you that her biggest concern is she would like to see the FRA meet and make a decision this summer or have Congress deal with it federally. But if that doesn't happen, I think she would feel differently. I'm keeping a positive attitude at this point, knowing that the bill is very much alive. And I think there's a sense among the body that if something doesn't happen either with this bill moving forward this year or the FRA meeting or the Congress making a change, this would be a slam dunk next year. So I'm still optimistic. I feel like we're in a great position. I can tell you the railroads are freaking out about it, but we'll see. This will be a busy week because I've got I've got the Racino bill hearing this afternoon at 1:30. There's a pretty good contingent of people coming down for that. Once again, I've got a little bit of an issue with the committee chair. Senator Lowe had his own his own bill that he presented on behalf of the Racing Commission that would extend the deadline for the studies to 2029 with no carve-outs, not allowing anyone else to come in the meantime. My bill, and so I've had conversations with Senator Lowe, and I think there's two others or three others on the committee that are from the Bellevue area. They don't want to see the deadline extended, so they voted down Senator Lowe's bill. Hmm. My bill says we'll extend it out to 2030 to give them time to make the studies done, but that they can approve casinos west of the 100th Meridian. And I've kind of made it clear to the members of the committee from the Bellevue area that I could care less about kicking out the deadline, but I want to know that we can move forward in the western two-thirds of the state and do it sooner rather than later. And so that's where I'm at. And I'm again, it's going to be whether or not he's going to allow a vote on that bill or not. If he does allow a vote, then it is a candidate for prioritization on my part. The other bills that I'm looking at is the Medigap bill is in Banking Committee, the LB 32. The chair has kind of wanted to wait and see if we can get some compromise with the insurance companies. I'm not seeing that they're ready to do anything yet. So I've told Julie Slama, the committee chair, that I think I want to exec on it. And pull it from, or get it kicked out to the floor. That too is a potential priority designation for me this year if I can't get two-person crew or the Racino bills out of committee. And then, of course, there's also the Halsey 4-H camp bill. I'm very optimistic that I'm going to get that named as a committee priority, and I've got the. That should be determined today or tomorrow. And if it gets named a committee priority, then, of course, it will have its own prioritization and move forward on its own. So that's kind of the lineup of the finalists right now. I've also got my Region 2 funding bill that's still out there. I'm working with DHHS. There was a rumor out there that I'd pulled the bill. I certainly have not pulled the bill. They're telling me that they're going to get this worked out. I told them that I'm making no promises as to whether or not on what I would do. That bill is in HHS and has not gotten out of committee at this point. It does have a big fiscal note tied to it, which is bogus, but that would really create a problem for passage this year until we can eliminate that fiscal note. So I'm still trying to work with them under the arrangement that if I have to bring it back next year, because I don't want the bill to go away. I want to keep the bill alive and then work on DHHS to get it moved forward, the HHS committee to move it forward. So so that's kind of where we are on bill lineup. My micro TIF bill, I did submit it as a potential committee or a speaker priority, but I do believe that he's going to get back to consent calendar bills so that my micro TIF bill and the mayor voting bill will get brought up on regular order. And once we get the filibuster stopped, which I think will happen once we go to all-day sessions, and then I should be able to move those two bills forward. So that's kind of a rundown.
When are priority bills due, Senator Jacobson?
They're due on the 14th.
Oh, my, tomorrow.
Now they're due, yes.
Oh, yeah. My.
Yes. Now, in light of the happenings in Ohio with trains, your two-person bill may be ahead of the rest of the world, Senator. Just from what I was reading this weekend, it's like Congress is putting the rail companies under pressure for safety reasons to do much of similar things.
Well, that's exactly right. I think that the argument, and I know the governor has weighed in on this, and I think the governor is of the opinion that he thinks that they need to do more with track safety. We're looking at tracks and technology, which is what the railroad companies are wanting to do. It did come out in testimony last week from one of the reps from the Burlington Northern from Kansas City, when he was pressed by Senator Kavanaugh as to, well, you've got two-person crew requirements today. This is just leaving the status quo, so why make a change? And she kept pressing him, and finally he said, well, he kept saying it's a collective bargaining issue, and finally he just said, well, if the two-person crew goes into statutes, we lose leverage in collective bargaining. And the room kind of went silent at that point, because I don't think anybody could believe that he admitted that the whole reason for keeping it out of statute is to give them a leg up in collective bargaining. Found that very interesting.
So much for safety and the concern of people.
What's that?
I said so much for safety and the concern of people.
Well, I've said all along that this is not a collective bargaining issue. This is a public safety issue. It's a worker safety issue as well, but it's a public safety issue as much as anything. When these derailments occur, having that conductor, Johnny on the spot, who can jump off that train, have the manifest available, particularly when you've got hazardous chemicals or materials on the train, and letting first responders know exactly what's there and how to deal with it, that's critically important. And then also being able to be there to actually save lives, whether it be an accident that occurs and if you hit a vehicle or something, or if you have a derailment and you're helping assist people that might have been next to the tracks at the time that the derailment occurred. I don't think it's too much to ask to have that second person on the train. And I'm just fearful that what they want to go to is completely remote controlled trains. And I think safety would just be really a problem if they went in that direction. So it is a concern. I do get the fact that it would be nice to have this instead of having patchwork state by state to have it across the country.
Sure.
But I think the more states that adopt it, the closer we'll get to feds adopting something as well. So that's why I still believe it's appropriate at the state level.
Is there a chance, Senator Jacobson, then, that you'll use your priority on LB 31?
I will if it comes out of committee.
Okay. And, of course, for those that are unaware, each individual senator gets to prioritize one bill. Committees get to prioritize. Does the committee get to prioritize a bill as well, Senator Jacobson?
Committee gets to prioritize two bills.
Two. And then the Speaker of the Nebraska Legislature gets to prioritize 25 total bills. And senators had to turn in their requests for those bills. I believe it was by mid-late last week, if memory serves correct.
Those had to be turned in by the 9th.
Okay.
And so those had to be turned in by the 9th. And then individual, the committee, so Speaker priorities on the 9th. Individual priority bills and committee priority bills have to be turned in by tomorrow. So then you're going to have 49 senator priority bills, 25 speaker priority bills, and then you're going to have two priority bills from each of the standing committees.
Okay.
And those...
Go ahead. Sorry,
go
Senator.
Ahead. No, I just say that at that point, what's going to happen then is the speaker will try to hear all priority bills first. Other than he will filter in a few consent calendar bills or bills in what we refer to in regular order, which would be non-controversial bills that generally could even get handled by a voice vote, but would be simple bills. So once we get away from filibustering and we start getting serious about passing legislation, yeah, we're hopeful then that we're going to be able to get these smaller, non-controversial bills handled. Nobody wants to waste their priority on a non-controversial bill, and so I'm still hopeful that I really want the micro TIF bill move forward, but I don't want to burn a personal priority on it. So that's why I'm looking at what are the bills that will not qualify for a speaker priority, won't qualify for non-controversial, and yet a bill that I think has a chance to pass. And so that's where I want to apply my priority to.
Yeah, there's a variety of ways that you could go, and we talked about this several times since the session began, Senator Jacobson. There's, you know, senators like Tom Brewer, for example, who's had his priority designated for a number of weeks with the constitutional carry. But you're in a very unique position where we could just kind of wait and see how things played out to kind of see what you're going to prioritize in terms of a bill. So it's a unique position that you find yourselves in that is not a common situation for senators.
Well, the ideal situation is if you knew exactly what your priority was going to be and named it early, got it out of committee early, it's probably going to get scheduled sooner. But there'll be a lot of priority bills that won't be designated until today or tomorrow. And so it's not necessarily a first-come, first-serve. In other words, the Speaker is going to have all the latitude he wants to decide when he schedules these priority bills. And so he'll look at the full batch, he'll figure out how controversial they might be, and then he'll figure out when's the right time to schedule it on the floor. Note to self, if you are a problem on the floor, yeah, your priority bill probably isn't going to get heard anytime soon. So something to remember.
And Senator Jacobson, let's talk a little bit about the Nebraska legislative activity last week. A lot of time on the floor taken up by Senator Linehan's LB 753.
Correct.
I was just wondering if you could tell us, a little bit about that.
Sure. Let me give you the color on 753. 753 is the Opportunity Scholarship Act. This has been her priority bill every year she's been down here. This is her seventh year. And what it is it provides for tax credits for those who make contributions to private or 501c private and parochial schools that they would then use those funds for scholarships for low to moderate income students. The contributions, well, at this point, the way the bill's designed, you'd get 100% dollar-for-dollar tax credit against up to 50% of your state income taxes if you made the contribution. The contributions go to these 501c3s blindly, meaning you can't designate who gets the scholarship. They have to make that their own determination that the school does. You can have no influence on it. There's a priority system as to who gets the scholarships. It starts with the lowest income, and then it works up to those that are higher income to the extent that their scholarship dollars available. The state would designate $25 million per year starting year one. The way the bill reads right now is that number could go from $25 million up to as high as $100 million a year on the out years. I think that, and it would also, it allows for corporations and it allows for nonprofit or corporations and trusts and estates to also give. Originally, it was set you could give up to $1 million. That now has been lowered to $100,000 through an amendment that I've negotiated with a few other conservative senators. We've got several other amendments that we want her to add on select file that would include relooking at whether this should be dollar-for-dollar tax credit, because, quite frankly, as an individual who's subject to the SALT tax, which is the state and local tax limitation on your income tax, state federal income tax, you could actually make money on this, meaning that if I gave 50% of my state tax liability to a nonprofit private school, I would actually get a 50%. I would get that money refunded back to me by the state, and it would be deductible as a charitable contribution on my federal return, and then I would get the federal deduction as well. So I would actually make money by doing this. I don't think that's right. So I think that's horrible tax policy. So I've been pushing for this to be a 75 cents on the dollar, so 75% of the contribution would get the 100% tax credit. that would bring it back in an individual situation to about a push. And that seems to be more appropriate than dollar for dollar. We've gone back and forth on this, and we're going to try to get that amended on select file. The other thing is I think we want to make sure that this does reach across the state and that it doesn't fill up the full allocation with Lincoln and Omaha, and Western Nebraska doesn't participate. So we've got private schools, obviously, and parochial schools in District 42. And so the expectation is if there's dollars for Eastern Nebraska, we better have the opportunity to do the same thing in our part of the state as well. So that's another amendment that she has indicated she would add to the bill. And then the other thing is I want to see the growth. I don't want this to grow to $100 million a year. I think it needs to be a more measured amount. And so that's also what's being discussed now in the way of amendments. I've gotten more emails on this issue than any issue that I've dealt with in the legislature so far, and that would include the abortion ban last year and the heartbeat bill this year. This dwarfs them. I would tell you that from a public school standpoint, there's concerns that it's taking money away from public schools. It is not. The money that's going to public schools will be greater. There's more money being put into the overall fund for public schools, and the $1 billion education future fund that the governor has put forward in his budget is guaranteeing that the dollars are going to be there to fund TEOSA for public schools. Plus, we're going to be getting a $1,500 per student foundation aid to every unequalized school district out there today, where they would be getting zero. They would be getting at least $1,500 per student. So there will be more money going to public schools, and I think that's critically important. We're also making it clear that should there ever be a pullback due to budgetary problems in the future, that both if public schools would lose money, would be dialed back for any reason, the scholarship program would have to come back as well. So I think there's a right balance. There's a right safeguards there. I'm very mindful of all the issues that are out there, but I want people to understand that I've gotten a lot of emails about, I voted for you, and so you need to do this. Folks, I'm down here to do the right thing, and I'm going to always do the right thing, and that's what I continue to be focused on. And so one thing you can rest assured is I will study the issues, I will listen to this constituents' feedback, and I know that there are going to be people upset no matter what I do, but at the end of the day, I'm focused on doing the right thing.
Well, Senator Jacobson, we appreciate the time as always. Best of luck this week, especially with LB 148 and General Affairs this afternoon.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. We'll talk to you again this time next week, sir.
See you guys.
District 42, Nebraska State Senator Mike Jacobson joining us for our weekly legislative update. And as I mentioned just a minute ago, LB 148 is Senator Jacobson's Racino bill. That'll be in the General Affairs Committee at 1:30 this afternoon. A live stream is available on the legislature's online website. And today, I believe, marks day number 43. Yeah, day number 43 of the 108th First Nebraska Legislative Session.